With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. You're with James Freeman and the Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome back to this second hour of today's Freeman Report. It is Friday. It's not Thursday. It's Friday. I nearly said Thursday then. Friday, the 3rd of May, 2024. I'm your host, James Freeman. And if you've just joined me, I've been discussing the hijacking of the gay rights movement by the Alphabet Gang with British actor and comedian James Dreyfus. I also caught up with Germany's capitalist superstar, Rainer Zeitelmann. We discussed many issues surrounding the German economy, the country's disastrous energy policy following the shutting down of all of its nuclear power stations, and then putting all of its reliance on gas pipelines delivering gas from Russia. And we all know what happened next. But of course, the Greens are in charge. And so the economy at the moment is in a right old state. We also spoke about immigration, given the fact I was quite shocked, actually, this morning when I was looking this up. 20% of the German population now is made up of migrants. And as Rainer said, it's not like they've added to the productivity in the main, because 60% of all the benefits claimants in Germany have got a migrant background. Anyway, if you did miss that first hour of the show, it will be uploaded to the website in the next few hours. So just head over to tntradio.live or download the app from the App Store and the Google Play Store. And then when you open it up, you just click on the episodes button and there you'll be able to watch and listen back to all of my previous shows. Right, so coming up in this hour, I'll be speaking with CIA veteran and whistleblower Pedro Israel Orca about exposing what the intelligence agency is up to around the world, all of the dastardly stuff that it is doing. And then to finish off the week, I'll be asking Tommy Robinson what his solution is to the Islam problem he says that we've got in the UK. Because whilst I get where Tommy is coming from, his stance on a number of issues, I do have a problem with how he goes out about getting the message out. Because, like it or not, there are 4 million Muslims living in the UK, with many living in our big cities. Tommy says he doesn't have a problem with Muslims. He says he's got Muslim friends. So I wonder if he understands that the way he goes about getting his message out actually creates a lot of resentment and hate towards the Muslim community, even if he says he doesn't have a problem with Muslims. My main question to Tommy will therefore focus on what his solutions are to the issues that he highlights about Islam and what his message is to the Muslims in the UK that are not involved in the grooming of kids and other crimes that he focuses on. Now, that isn't to say that I don't agree with the position Tommy has on a number of issues, though, like the grooming gangs and the establishment cover-up that goes all the way through the British policing system, local councils, and even through Westminster, all at the expense of the lives of young British girls in cities up and down the UK. It is a problem. And it is undeniably a problem that is mostly associated with the Pakistani community. Then there is the ghettoisation of our cities, where immigrant communities have not integrated with the British culture and the British people, and where residents who were born there now feel like they no longer belong. It is not racist to acknowledge that government policy of mass immigration has failed many parts of the country because too many people were allowed to come in too short a time period. And what has made the problem worse is very little investment in upgrading the country's infrastructure to cope with the influx of new people, which means people have ended up in a situation where locals who were born there cannot access overcrowded services and where local people cannot find housing. So I get it. But is Tommy's approach of constantly pointing the blame at people who are already here, is it helpful, or does it make relations between communities worse? And I guess more importantly, what is Tommy trying to achieve? All of that in the next final hour of this week's Freeman Report. If you want to get in touch, then please email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you want to join in the conversation, get yourself over to tntradio.live and click on the chat icon. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
Russia, gas prices, COVID mandates.
It just doesn't seem like anybody's doing anything about it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'm going to say it, Gemsy, it's Friday, TFI Friday.
I'll let you have that one, little moniker, my family moniker nickname. Yes, you can have that on a Friday. It is Friday. And of course, it's been a busy week and it continues to be a very busy Friday. I mean, politics is just going crazy. The local election results continue to trickle in. We won't see the result of all the elections until after the weekend, where we'll hear the mayoral elections. We'll hear Sadiq Khan has kept his seat in London. But certainly it's not looking good. Spelling doom for the Conservative Party, most of the results that are coming in. Whether, of course, these results would be reflected if this was a general election, we don't necessarily know, because local elections are often a time when people let off a bit of steam. When it comes to a general election, they vote in a different way. But who knows? We'll find out in a few months, certainly when the general election does happen. Talking of politics, our unelected Foreign Secretary, Dave Cameron, he's been in Ukraine the last couple of days, pledging more support. And he's today said, just an hour or so ago in an interview in Ukraine, that he's going to appoint a new envoy who will be responsible for driving up defence production in the UK for Ukraine and other Western nations. He was speaking in an interview. He said, the world is at a tipping point. We keep hearing this all the time from politicians. The threat of Russia, the world is on a tipping point. And he's pledged already $3 billion as well over the next few years for Ukraine, even more. And he says this envoy will make the defence companies ramp up production for support for Western nations, NATO nations, and Ukraine in particular. 17 years to the day that Madeleine McCann went missing. Her parents have today paid tribute to her on the official Madeleine McCann website. And a little update for you on the pro-Palestinian protest that sprung up at University College London following a series of UK universities this week that have copied US students by camping out in support of Palestinians and the war in Gaza. Today, they've been asking since we last spoke for people to donate food, hot water bottles, blankets. They say the weather is cold, it's wet. They're miserable and in pain, which makes them, they say, empathize with the people of Gaza more. But they're urging people to bring food to them, blankets, hot water bottles, and any other supplies that they can muster. That's cries being echoed at several universities where these protests are ongoing. The government sources have said in the last hour they are monitoring the situation. They're concerned about agitators infiltrating these student protests, and they're also very concerned about evident anti-Semitic posts that might be put up with relation to these protests on social media. So they are keeping a very, very, very close eye on this in Whitehall, James, as the latest university student protest gets underway outside UCL London.
Yeah, and I think, you know, students should be very, very mindful, I think, of what's going on in the US and make sure that the protests remain about focused on what the issue is, and that is calling for a ceasefire. Because otherwise, I think the politicians here will jump on the bandwagon of what's happened in the US and find any reason to close them down, particularly if, I don't know, we hear certain slogans and that kind of thing being called. Yeah, Gemma, the local elections. The other thing to mention, as well as people generally, you said, kind of letting off steam and pushing back against the party in power. The other thing that we see with local elections is the turnout. Very, very low often, quite often 25%. It's not uncommon. I think even lower than that in some areas as well. So I guess the results of those elections will be dependent on who came out to vote, rather than it being, I think, a reflection on the mood of the country. But it'd be interesting to see. When do we get the next batch of results in?
Well, they're trickling in all the time. So we've had one of the mayoral results, which was in Tees Valley. That held a Conservative seat, actually, which I think Rishi Sunak was heaving a bit of a sigh of relief at that one. I know that Sadiq Khan, I don't think the count starts till today for him or even tomorrow. So I don't think we'll know the true picture of the turnout across the whole of England and Wales until the end of the weekend. We can certainly reflect that on Monday. I mean, we might be talking, the weather's shocking today. It's wet and cold. It is wet and cold. And yesterday it was wet and cold, does have an effect at the ballot box as well. I was reading some first-hand accounts of how young people had voted, and many of them said that they didn't leave the house because of the weather. And a lot of younger people actually have said they've lost complete faith in the political process. Don't think that any of the parties are listening to people. A lot of people, young people, are considering moving to other countries and never coming back, which is interesting. This is the next generation. So we won't know. Maybe 20%. It's only about normally 30 to 40%, isn't it? Maybe what if it's 20? We just don't know. We just don't know until we see on Monday morning.
And obviously the thing that many of us are watching is how George Galloway's party will do at these elections, but also Reform UK. Are there any indications yet? I mean, I did see the figures for Blackpool, which was a Westminster election there. It was a by-election. I think Reform UK nearly pipped the Conservatives into second place. But the other thing to mention is both were a long way off, weren't they, off of the winning party, which was Labour.
Exactly. Reform have done well. They have done very well in a lot of areas. Lots of graphs and charts are coming out showing that Reform has taken what were traditional Conservative votes. It's kind of split the vote in a lot of places where actually the Tories would have won if people who voted Reform had voted Tories. They wouldn't have won by much, but they would have won. So Reform has taken a lot of the votes away. Again, whether we would see that reflected in a general election, I don't know. But certainly on a local level, they seem to have hit the spot with a lot of traditional Conservative voters.
I guess the question is, though, and this is something I've talked about on this show before, is are they actually going to get anyone elected? Is there any signs yet of any councillors for Reform UK being elected?
I have not seen that. I haven't seen any come in. Yeah. It has been but I've seen the vote been split with a different shade of blue on the graphs, which is going over to Reform, yeah, which we haven't seen before. We haven't seen that, so...
We haven't seen that, but my suspicion is, and I still think, unless something really, really changes, like I said, we see all these boats coming over the channel in the summer, and the Rwanda bill totally falling on its arse. I don't think Reform are going to get anyone elected. I mean, that's the thing; they're just going to change the sort of how well the Tories do. I think that's what's going to happen. Anyway, Gemma, obviously this is the last show of the week for the Freeman Report. I hope you have a great weekend and look forward to speaking with you again next week.
Thank you, James.
Right. Okay. After this short break, we're going to be talking all about the CIA from CIA veteran and whistleblower Pedro Israel Orca. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
TNT's Pella Neuroth Taylor.
Paint a picture of this, what it would look like. In its various aspects, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, look, it's not too hard to recognize. We can see what's going on in China in the same exact way. Social credit, surveillance, biometric tracking, facial scans, fingerprints, iris scans. All this is exactly what we're talking about. Drones, surveillance from the sky. You know, this is the kind of stuff that which most Americans may not be aware is already on your doorstep. It's already on the cameras in your stoplights. I mean, this stuff is everywhere. I'm not to suggest that those are iris scans in your stoplights, but surveillance, broad surveillance that has now begun to step into that. And so this is now something that we need to connect to immediately what's happening in our lives. And what we're talking about on the border is a both way conversation. And this has been very public, right? That this is for Americans going out, Americans coming in, or legal immigrants going out, coming in, or illegal immigrants. And all of that's going to be tracking things that we should have a right to have a say in.
Pella Neuroth Taylor on today's News Talk, TNT.
One scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
When the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
I'm relying on luck, but who knows if it'll be on my side.
When it comes to disasters and emergencies, it's not a matter of if, but when. Take control. 1. Assess your needs. 2. Make a plan. 3. Engage your support network. Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell.
TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Turn on Alexa and ask her to play
TNT.
Turning on anything else usually requires dinner and conversation, dressing up and brushing your teeth. I'm already tired.
This is today's news talk. TNT.
Right, we hear a lot about the CIA and all of those secretive or not so secretive operations that go on around the world. But I don't very often get to speak to somebody who's actually been in the agency. So my next guest, his name is Pedro Israel Orca. He is a CIA veteran and whistleblower. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Pedro.
Thank you so much for having me on your show this morning.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. Now, Pedro, let's start with your book. You've written a book. It's titled The Broken Whistle, A Deep State Run Amok. Tell us about the book and what it's about.
I blew the whistle using all the procedures and policies internally on some serious matters in a war zone. And the process is just completely broken, thus the broken whistle. But in this process of blowing the whistle, I ended up working in the Office of Inspector General for the Intelligence Community, where I was able to work on a team that evaluated these reprisal protections. And we found that, yes, indeed, these processes are broken. So ultimately, all these claims that you can blow the whistle inside the intelligence community and you will be protected, the reality is that, no, you're not. You blow the whistle, you do so at your own risk of facing reprisals. In my case, I was basically kicked out of a war zone, sent back home, literally left to fend for myself with every single office refusing to help. I got essentially chased out of the CIA, taking shelter in the Inspector General. Ultimately, the Inspector General sends me back to the CIA for what I call round two with the devils. At this point in time, I'm blowing the whistle to the senior executives. I'm talking about the director of the CIA, deputy director, the chief operations officer, which is the number three. I'm blowing the whistle to the director of national intelligence. I'm making disclosures to Congress using the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act. And they're basically treating my disclosures and my blowing the whistle as if it was just garbage, and treating me as if I was yesterday's trash. So I was fired a year shy of my hard-earned pension, which included 6-7 years of war zone work. You know, my body, you know, suffered because of those years working in the war zone. And all the reprisals had an impact on my marriage at the time, you know, a daughter. So it caused eventually the marriage to fail and for my daughter to relocate to a foreign country. So it has caused grave damages to my own daughter. And ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, when you look at everything with all their claims that these processes work, when all of a sudden there was a claim against President Trump, a so-called whistleblower, the Ukraine whistleblower, the telephone call, all of a sudden they gave this guy all the protections, all the attention and everything. So no, the processes are broken. You know, I call the CIA sometimes criminals in action, clowns in action, because despite the good they do, there's a lot that in reality is just criminal-like behaviors.
Yeah, Pedro, are you able to talk about what you were blowing the whistle on?
In a war zone, I was a deputy chief of base. I was working for a chief of base. This was my, probably like my fifth, sixth time out in the war zone. By the time you add the 6+ years war zone work, I knew what we were supposed to do, not supposed to do, how a base should conduct itself, the personnel conduct itself in a war zone. Well, this chief of base was just ill-equipped, not prepared, out of place, and started creating a hostile work environment for personnel below us, with adopting sons, prioritizing preferential treatment towards an older, a younger officer versus an older officer. But the worst about it was we weren't meeting our obligations of meeting with the military, exchange of information. It was more of a social club on steroids, and we were going not out of the wire, but it's a huge, huge base. Going in this base into zones where that were impacted by rockets for food or for yoga classes, for example. And we had some incidents where, you know, one time we went through a path that was hit by a rocket like 10 minutes after we drove by it. And the reason why we were out there was for food. So I blew the whistle on this and got sent home for it. Then I blew the whistle on the fact that the whistle is broken.
Yes.
And at that point in time, they send in the CIA Office of Security, like a mafia-like enforcer, to threaten to take my job and my clearance from me if I wouldn't shut up. And when I refused to play ball by the rules, they went ahead and they did what they said they would do. They basically ran a surveillance op against me, denied me entry into a building, and put me through a personnel evaluation board process that's really more of a kangaroo court. Because it's the Office of Security that has the final say whether a person loses their clearance or not, or whether they're fired or not. And the Office of Security was covering for itself. So they fired me.
Yeah. Now, who is responsible? I mean, obviously, the politicians have got a role in this. But there's an interesting post, I think, that James O'Keefe posted on X. So again, I've got two questions here. Firstly, who actually oversees and who is the CIA accountable to? Because what James O'Keefe says is that the CIA was withholding information from President Trump when he was in office. So if the president is not able to, and the CIA can keep information away from the president, who is overseeing these intelligence agencies?
Okay. The Constitution of the United States has three branches of government. The executive branch, the president is the head of the executive. All these executive branch agencies like the CIA work for the president. The legislative branch provides oversight over the executive branch. In this particular case, what we have going on here is basically a systemic issue that's been going on for decades. It's a lack of congressional oversight. Congress has the power of the purse, the power of funding, power of in the Senate advising for appointments, but in the House, the budgetary issues. So Congress is not doing their duty to hold these agencies accountable, because what has happened here is these agencies have become so powerful that their power is even greater than a president. President Trump is not the only one who has suffered the fate of agencies stonewalling, blackballing, impeding, and not at times playing ball by what the president wants to do. The other presidents in the past have faced these issues. And the bureaucracy, the civil servants, or in some cases, the political appointees that burrow in, that stay in, will seek to undermine a new presidential administration. And this is a totally systemic issue within the United States government that affects other agencies in the government.
So, I mean, if Congress are not overseeing the CIA and the CIA decides what it can show the president or not, who's captured the CIA? I mean, are they just a rogue runaway entity now?
There are elements of basically a rogue agency, a deep state run amok. And you got to look at the historical background and perspective of how this happened. And if I can summarize it, you got to look at the past couple of presidential administrations. You had basically Clinton from 93 to 2001. You had Bush the second from the 2001 to 2009. Obama from basically 2009 through 2017. So you've had a heavy Democratic presence in the executive branch of the U.S. government. And, you know, you got to look at Brennan and Clapper. Clapper was the longest serving director of national intelligence. Brennan was a very forceful, powerful official within the Obama administration that got put into the CIA. So what happened to these agencies is they ended up bringing in Democratic operatives, strong Democratic operatives. The hiring process became more in line with Democratic presidential politics. So by the time Trump came in, Trump was hated, despised, and there were bureaucrats in the CIA who would seek to undermine him. And basically, that's what you have going on. Officials who have remained behind, who have a Democratic-leaning perspective that seeks to undermine these type of Republican presidents.
Yeah, which is essentially undermining of democracy itself in America, because exactly. The American people pick the president, and then we've got intelligence agencies which are undermining the president. How does America go about fixing this problem? What needs to happen?
The Congress needs to get back to its oversight duties, and oversight is not having a hearing and issuing a report. A lot of these hearings and reports are basically what you can call political theater, grandstanding, and showmanship. I mean, they're going to have to go back and do some of the hard things like was done in the 70s with the Church Committee, where they're going to do a deep dive and evaluate really what is going on in some of these agencies, budgetary, personnel, programs. And they cannot allow these agencies to stonewall, because part of the problem is these agencies will not give documents, will lie, will spin. If that happens, Congress is going to have to cut funding to these agencies and stop paying some of the people. They have the power to actually deny payroll, in some cases, to some officers of these agencies, and they certainly have the power to stop funding. So they'll need to use the power of the purse to stop funding and payroll to get these agencies to comply and ultimately do significant reforms where these agencies will be subservient to a president and Congress, because they work for the American people. These yeah. agencies are working for the American people. They're not working for their own benefit or necessarily for the benefit of a party or even for that matter, the benefit of a president. They're supposed to be independent civil servants representing the people.
Yeah, and we're going to take a break now, Pedro, but when we come back, it's just a short break. I want to stay on the direction we're going in and ask the question, the CIA, it was set up to work overseas, wasn't it? It was set up to carry out operations overseas. And I think that's been put into question in recent years. And there is evidence that potentially the CIA is involved in working against the American people, maybe surveillance and that type of thing. So I'd love to hear your view on that. And again, you know, how do we go about fixing this? So, Pedro, stay where you are right here on TNT.
TNT Radio News. Bring the news.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The House Judiciary Committee is investigating Matthew Colangelo, a former senior Department of Justice official now involved in Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg's prosecution of former President Donald Trump. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with Israeli leaders, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and President Isaac Herzog, to push for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, linked to a hostage deal with Hamas.
The common housefly. Caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Right, now, Pedro, just before the break there, I was saying that the CIA was set up to carry out operations abroad. But I think there's certainly a lot of evidence coming out that that line between domestic and foreign operations is getting blurred in some instances. Am I correct in saying that? And you know, what's your view on all of this?
It is correct. And let's look at some historical data here. The National Security Act of 1947 formed the CIA and actually Department of Defense. But the CIA gets its charter, per se, its marching orders from a presidential executive order called 12333. And that gives very specific guidelines of what the CIA is supposed to do, but it also does for the FBI. And correct, the CIA is for foreign intelligence gathering, whereas the FBI is for internal law enforcement investigations. But what has happened is, you got to look at 9/11, September 11, 2001, and the Patriot Act and the restructuring of the intelligence community, and for that matter, FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, authorities for collecting of information. If any American becomes a suspect or a target of counterterrorism, or for that matter, counterintelligence, these powers of FISA and terrorist authorities can be used against them, which undermine basically that gray line of where the CIA is supposed to work only foreign and not domestic, because the CIA does work with the FBI. And as long as the CIA is working with the FBI, they actually can work on the U.S. to conduct operations against Americans if they're believed to be involved in counterterrorism, counterintelligence, but under the authorities of the FBI. But that gets into a lot of bureaucratic lingo, you know, detailees, where you've got dual-hatted individuals that are both working FBI and CIA, embedded in respective agencies. And ultimately, you know, it goes back to just how much power the government has gained through the Patriot Act, the FISA authorities. And as long as they continue to have that massive amount of power, like Brennan did, he says, oh, Trump and his associates, you know, they're Russian stooges. They can begin an investigation led by the FBI, but the CIA can play a part in it.
How big a problem is this, Pedro?
When it becomes politicized without oversight, it can be an abuse of power and almost literally a criminal act. And we've seen, and we can only imagine what we have not seen. I mean, part of the Mar-a-Lago raid reportedly is because the FBI went in there because they wanted to get back all the documents from Crossfire Hurricane that cover their tracks on their basically illegal operation against Trump. So we can safely assume and presume that this abuse is severe and significant. And we see parts of it in just these breadcrumbs that have come out.
And obviously this year is an election year, isn't it? I think at the moment, if we believe the polls, it looks like President Trump is going to get re-elected and he's going to come back into office. I'm assuming that he's learned a few tricks and learned a lot from his first term about, you know, the deep state and what he's actually up against. What do you think, Trump, what tact do you think he'll take if he gets elected this year?
Well, he's going to have to ensure that the people that he hire for these agencies will have his back and not their back. And I really don't like calling out names, but one specific individual is Mike Pompeo, who was the director of the CIA. I mean, what did he do? He selected Gina Haspel, a defender of the bureaucracy, who reportedly was a chief of station in London, who played a role in the Steele dossier, to be his deputy. And ultimately, I saw and I witnessed firsthand how pretty much Mike Pompeo just kind of washed his hands and allowed the CIA to do what it wanted to do. In my case, for sure, after I went to him, the reprisals ramped up until I got fired. So he's got to ensure, Trump's got to ensure that if he appoints people to any agency, that these officers are going to go in and do the right thing. You know, not be like William Sessions, the first attorney general that basically washed his hands and wanted nothing to do with the potential Russia hoax that led to the special counsel, not do what Pompeo did and many others. So he's got to select loyalists that are loyal to the Constitution, loyal to the president, but at the same time are willing to rein in these abuses of power.
How many Americans do you think are aware of all these problems? Because, I mean, the one big sort of story which has come about over the past couple of years is the whole Biden laptop thing. You know, right before the election, I think it was a week before, there was that story in the Washington Post about this laptop by Hunter Biden containing all of this secretive stuff on there. And we saw a letter being written by, I think it was 50 intelligence chiefs in the US saying, no, there's no such thing. This is all Russian misinformation. Of course, we know now it was true, all of it. And so, and I'm assuming, I think we have to assume that the intelligence chiefs knew that that laptop existed. So this is a huge problem because essentially that's interference in American elections. How aware do you think the American population are of the problem they've got?
It's been an eye-opening experience for me living here in the middle part of the country, the Midwest, as they call it, in Oklahoma. And from my interactions, the reality is most Americans are clueless as far as what goes on in their government and in Washington, D.C. And it doesn't help us when they've got a lot of political operatives, a lot of Democratic operatives actually involved in the media. And you've got all this censorship, which has been proven to be true. So you've got a control of the narrative by Democratic operatives in alignment with the media that are misinforming the public. And if the public is only listening to the mainstream media, they will never get the truth. They're only going to get the political spin that the masters want to put out. So here is where alternative media sources, thankfully, are rising up, are becoming more prevalent, and is helping to inform the public. And we need more of these non-traditional media entities like yourself, TNT, and others. Yeah. And this is the only way we're ever going to solve this problem of misinformation.
Yeah, absolutely. Pedro, I'm going to leave you on that, on those words, and leave you with the mission of going out and spreading the word of TNT and helping us spread the word to help save America. Because, you know, I think when we talk about that letter, interference in elections, it's a huge problem in America. You know, it's questionable whether America is even a democracy anymore. I mean, that's how big this problem is.
Yeah, look at Liz Truss' book, 10 Years to Save the West. Exactly. Look at Venezuela, 10 years it was destroyed. Yeah. We follow on this same trajectory. We're going to end up like Venezuela.
Exactly. Pedro Israel Orca, thank you so much for joining me on the Freeman Report. Thank you.
Thank you. God bless you.
Right. Okay. We're going to take a short break now, and I'm hoping that Tommy Robinson will be up after the break, but we'll find out in a moment, won't we? Right here on TNT.
I was a quarterback at Hardaway High School. College first round draft pick, on and off the field. We were taught to not show any signs of weakness. During the football season, I would stop eating, but I didn't know I was depressed. I thought that something was wrong with me. For 20 plus years was physical, physical, physical. We didn't have any education behind what mental health was. I started to learn it starts here first. If this is together, I'll be better as a father, as a man, and as a husband. Put the importance on your mental health. I'm not scared to talk about it anymore. The first tool is therapy. The second one is positive self-talk. And then journaling, putting your thoughts on paper.
We have to redefine what being a strong man is.
And heal. Love. Your mind.
The challenges our planet's animals are facing sometimes feel a bit heavy.
The animals haven't eaten in a day, 2 days. They haven't drank anything. They're cold. They're dehydrated.
But remember, there's good happening right now. At home.
All right, we were able to get into your unit and we have all four of your cats. So,
okay. And around the world for any animal, any disaster. Search ifa.org/disaster ready.
This is the Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, so to finish off the week here on the Freeman Report, I'm delighted to be welcoming back Tommy Robinson to the Freeman Report. Hello, Tommy, how are you doing?
I'm good, mate. I'm good, thank you.
Yeah. Other
than,
Tommy.
As I said, other than the sunburn, I'm great. Look at my face. It's embarrassing. It's humiliating.
I'm jealous, mate. It hasn't stopped raining in the UK for what seems like months now. So, but anyway, moving on. Tommy, tell us about your court case recently. Obviously, you know, you were arrested. I think it was pretty dodgy, that whole order that was given to you, the fact that you had to get out of London. And it obviously fell apart very, very quickly in court. Tell us what happened.
I was arrested on the 26th of November. I went to London as a journalist to report on an anti-Semitism rally. It's going to be the biggest rally the country's seen against anti-Semitism. In the prior months to that, we've seen our capital city taken over week in, week out by pro-Hamas supporters, calling for the gassing of Jews, calling openly for jihad, making some of the most absurd and hatred comments that we've seen. Yeah? And then there was an anti-Semitism rally. So I went as a journalist. I identified myself. I just went with my cameraman, sat in a cafe to have a breakfast. A group, 6 to 8 police officers come in and said I needed to leave and vacate the area. I asked why. They said that my presence could cause people alarm and distress. My presence. If we went by that, I wouldn't be able to leave my home. Yeah, my presence could cause people alarm and distress. I said, I'm having a breakfast. Are you going to refund me for my breakfast? They said no. So I said, I'm going to finish my breakfast. Finished my breakfast. Went to leave. As I come out of the cafe, police come from everywhere. They read me this order where they were giving me an order. I then read out, because that morning the Metropolitan Police Force had put out a statement, and it's because a GB news presenter was attacked the day before at a pro-Palestinian rally, and the Met police statement said the importance of the freedom of the press, and the media should be able to go to any demonstration and report freely without fear or intimidation. The media's rights are as important as an individual's rights to protest. So I read that out to the police officer and said, you said this, yes, you said this morning. I'm here as a journalist. They wouldn't accept that I was there as a journalist. We'll get onto the court case, but it turned out that the judge accepted I was there as a journalist. And then they gave me this order, which told me I needed to leave. My comments then, as they pulled me down the stairs, are, which way do I go? From them giving me the order to arrest me was 35 seconds. This is in the judge's judgment. 35 seconds, yeah? They then marched me off, pulling me one way, pulling me the other way, and then from point blank range, they pepper sprayed me. Now, this video went viral. Luckily for me, the whole world saw it. It was in every country. And people saw I hadn't committed a crime. They saw I wasn't aggressive. Contrary to what the police's statements say, because the police's statements say I was aggressive, I was swinging my arms around, total lies. The police officer said that he pepper sprayed me because I was about to escape free from lawful custody. I was already handcuffed with 30 police officers around me. So all of this, I'll be honest with you as well, James, I didn't have much faith that I was going to get off with this. I thought I'd be going to prison on St. George's Day. The final day was St. George's Day. That's what I expected. But that's a run of my arrest and what I was arrested for.
So all of this fell apart, didn't it, in court? And I think a lot of the legacy press, Tommy, were trying to present it as, oh, it was all down to this police officer who wrote the wrong date on the order sheet. But I've spoken to the Voice of Wales, and they said it's actually more extensive than that, the reasons it fell apart. Tell us why the case fell apart at the end.
And I'll explain. So as well, when I was charged, it all made sense. It made sense why they arrested me. Because when I was charged, I was given bail conditions not to enter London. I wasn't allowed inside the M25, yeah, at all, okay, or I'd go to jail. I appealed those bail conditions. I spent £7,000, another £8,000, going to court multiple times, trying to get my rights back, trying to say I need to come into London for work, for the right of a family life, to take my I asked. I even went to court to ask, can I take my children to the Christmas lights turn on? No. So point blank range, I was refused, even though there was no evidence in this case. From the start, there's never been any evidence in this case, but the judge still refused it because that gave the police the power to prevent me and my presence in London. So week in, week out, as we've all seen, the pro-Hamas rallies have continued. When we actually got to court and we went to trial, the first thing that came about, which I was surprised at the police officer's honesty in testimony when he was in the dock, he was very honest. So basically, they had one order, which was an order from the 24th of November, 2 days before. So they brought in this section 35, because when they bring it in, they have to have a legitimate reason to bring it in. They have to fear antisocial behaviour. Then they can bring in these dispersal orders and ask people to leave certain areas. But they have to have a reason. Their reason why the officer gave it was to prevent the pro-Palestinian demonstrators who have been violent week in, week out. That's the reason he got the order. Nothing to do with the anti-Semitism rally, yeah? And the order and the order on the 24th was 10 a.m. But the order on the 26th, which they didn't know we had a copy of, was from 2 p.m. Yeah. So on the 26th, theirs is from 2 p.m. When they handed us their paperwork, instead of saying 2 p.m. on the actual order, it says 10 a.m. When the officer was put in the dock and my QC, my King's Counsel, pulled out our order and said, can we just explain why our one says 2 p.m. and your one says 10 a.m.? Because legally, if they change the order, they have to do a new order and there has to be a trail of what's happened in those orders. But there wasn't. They didn't give us anything. They just said, here's the order. So then he read out the legalities of what they have to do, then questioned him and said, okay, so when was this changed? Because the date is also wrong. It says the 24th instead of at 10 a.m. And then he just admitted, he said, I changed it on the day. And they said, what time did you change it on the day? At 4:15. So the order didn't come into place till 2 o'clock. They arrested me at 1 o'clock. Yeah. So then to get around to make the order legal, he went in and changed the time to 10 a.m. Yeah. But left the original date on the 24th. So, and they could, and they said, well, can you produce the actual order that from the day? Yeah. But before you've altered it at a later stage, where's the actual original order? He said, no, I can't. So he said, was there, and that's when he was asked on the dock, well, how can this judge take any satisfaction that there was ever a lawful order? And he turned and said, well, the court can't, because there wasn't a lawful order. They made it lawful. So that was the day.
It's shocking. Shocking, Tommy. It really is shocking. Now, I don't want to spend the whole a whole of a conversation on this, but very, very quickly, I think you are going to sue the Met, aren't you?
I'm going to sue the Met. I am. Do you know what? The first two companies I've contacted to sue the Met have refused to represent me. Even though I've gone through the case to them, they said it's 100%. They've already, because what the judge ruled four different points were unlawful. Yeah. So the whole thing was unlawful. He also ruled that even if they weren't unlawful, when this went to trial, 35 seconds is not long enough to give someone an order and then arrest them. You have to give them a fair time to leave. You didn't do that. Yeah. So the arrest was unlawful. Bail conditions unlawful. The pepper spraying unlawful. Everything's unlawful. Which means I've got a 100% guaranteed case against Metropolitan Police Force. The first two law firms I contacted refused to represent me because of who I am. Just refused. So I found a lawyer now who I've spoke to, but I am going to be suing the Met. I'm going to be suing them for the embarrassment, humiliation, the attack. My still, £60,000 we spent on this, fighting this. They arrested me on my daughter's birthday again. After putting me on bail, they arrested me out celebrating my daughter's birthday. Yeah, they come, mob-handed and nicked me for that because I was inside the perimeter of the M25 when I took my daughter and her friends out. But I do want to sue the Met. But my main grievance is the fact that they, because people say you won. And yeah, I feel like I did win. And I'm glad people got to see how corrupt they were. But have I won? They took my rights and freedoms for 6 months. Yeah, they attacked me. They controlled me. They controlled my journalism. They prevented my journalism. All of this is in a film. I've got a film coming out on the 1st of June, James. On the biggest screen in this country, it's going to be put up outside Parliament, where I'm going to premiere the documentary called Lawfare, A Totalitarian State. And it looks at me, but not just me. It looks at the abuse of police powers, their corrupt charges that they bring against people, different sorts of activists who are given these unlawful cases, illegal cases, where they make them up in order to control them for 4 months, 6 months, 9 months with bail conditions, not to do their work, not to do the activism, not to go on the internet. So that's what, so it's given me the opportunity to create a film, which is going to come out on the 1st of June as well.
Awesome. Now, Tommy,
come along, James, come along and report it. Come along and report it.
Yes, no, I will, Tommy, I will. Listen, so you got your social, because obviously you were banned on Twitter like a lot of people were. You got your account back now. Now, Tommy, I think I've said before, I'm totally with you on a lot of the things which you work on, the journalism that you do, like the grooming gangs. I've had lots of people on the show here. It is a real issue. There's corruption that runs through the police, the councils, even through to Westminster. So you've done some fantastic work there, raising issues there. There is also a problem with immigration because, you know, I think in a lot of our cities, we've got essentially ghettos where we've had too many people coming in too quickly. They haven't integrated and we've got all sorts of problems. So I think I'm with you on a lot of the issues that you raise. I guess I'd just like to sort of question you though on sort of your messaging on social media, because I do look at it a lot of the time, and I think I guess I worry that because you're always kind of focusing so much on Muslims and you're pointing very much at crimes that are being done, that it whips up a lot of hate potentially and discrimination against Muslims. Now, I know you've said, because I've heard you say it, you know, you've got no problem with Muslims. I mean, in fact, you've got friends that are Muslims. But do you recognise the fact that your approach, I think, in terms of getting your message out on social media, potentially does create resentment and potentially hatred towards the community?
No, I don't. No, I don't accept it. No, I believe Islam is the biggest threat to this nation, to our nation. Yeah, I believe that open border Islamic immigration coming from the countries they come from with the mindsets they do is a huge risk. So I want to do everything I can to make the public aware. There's many cities in this country that don't have an Islamic community, who don't know anything about Islam. I want them to be aware of the dangers they're going to face. I wish someone would have come to my hometown 30 years ago and said, listen, if you have open border immigration from the Islamic community, these are the dangers. I make sure that I go out of the way to educate anyone that follows me that hating Muslims is a problem. Yeah, if you hate people, that if you promote hatred against people, but picking faults with an ideology, picking faults with the Quran, looking at the Prophet Muhammad and picking faults with him, even mocking him in any way, is your God-given right. So I separate the two, the people from the idea. The idea is there to be criticised. The idea is growing influence in our country, in our towns and cities. It's problematic and it needs to be spoken about openly and honestly without fear. And too many people are fearful of speaking about it, especially our politicians. There is not one politician since the time of Winston Churchill, there's not one who has openly criticised Islam in Parliament. With all the jihad attacks, all the rapes, all the grooming, not one person has even tried to have a discussion on Islam. None. Only Lord Pearson in the House of Lords. Other than Lord Pearson, no one. 650 MPs. Some of those MPs represent Rotherham, where they've had 1,400 children linked, and they don't even want to find out why. They haven't even looked for the link to understand why. They're all too cowardice to speak about it or challenge what needs to be challenged. I think the time for worrying about offending people has gone. I don't want to tiptoe around anymore at all. I think that the time now is to have an open and frank discussion. And I don't believe it's inciting hatred. I believe that Islam does that.
Yeah, I mean, what is your message then to, I guess we've got 4 million Muslims in the UK. What is your message then, I guess, to Muslims that are not, because look, there's no doubt, Tommy, and like I said, you've done a great job in raising the problem, the fact that we have got a problem within the Pakistani community. That is just what the numbers show on these grooming gangs and a lot of other issues that we've got in certain parts of the country. But what is your message to all the other Muslims? Because they, even though we've got a problem within the Pakistani community, it is still a minority of that community. What's your message to the wider community?
My message to the wider community is don't blindly defend something that you don't know everything about. What I have found with so many Muslims, I've done a podcast recently with a Muslim girl, I've done a podcast with an ex-Muslim girl. I found out that they aren't actually aware of many of the teachings of Islam. All the actions of Muhammad. I sat down with two Muslim lads after an interview and they said, did he really do that? I said, yes, he did. Yeah, he beheaded 600 people in one day. Okay, this is what he did. And I went through it all. So many Muslims, I want Muslims to really feel freedom. I want Muslim women to be free. If they're born in Britain, 55,000 British young Muslim children have had female genital mutilation. That is outrageous that no one's been prosecuted. We've had one prosecution. They are British girls born in Britain and they're not being protected by the law due to cultural sensitivities. So I want them to be free. I want them to enjoy freedom. The fact that since October 7th, we've had a study that has shown us that 33% of British Muslims want Sharia law. My message to the 33% is you need to leave. Yeah, that's what you need to do. The West is not for you. If you want to impose an oppressive ideology such as Sharia law on a country and overthrow our democracy, you need to leave. To the majority who don't want Sharia law, you need to start calling out the problems, highlighting the problems. I don't want every Muslim to leave the UK, but if any Muslims that do wish to impose their ideology and hatred upon our country, it's time to leave. It's gone too far. The demographical change to this nation is uncontrollable. If we just sit back and have quiet discussions about it for another 10 years, it's going to be too late.
Tommy, how much of this do you think is about Islam versus, say, culture, for example? Because, look, Islam is based upon a book, just like we have the Bible in Christianity. There's a lot of bonkers stuff in the Bible, to be honest with you. But, you know, so how much is it really about the religion Islam versus the fact that we've had communities coming in from country where cultural practices are the norms which don't stand up with British values?
I'd say they're religious practices. And as I said, if there's 1.2 million Muslims who want Sharia law, that's not to do with their culture. That's to do with Islam and the teachings of Islam. They want to impose, they want to impose the teachings of Islam on Britain. That's a problem.
So Tommy, I'll cut it in there because we've only got a minute left. If you were an MP now, or if you had any power in politics, what would you do to solve it? And sorry, you've only got a minute.
I'd close our borders, I'd empty every hotel, every illegal immigrant that's coming to our country would be leaving, we do have an asylum process, but this is illegal economic migration into our country. I'd stop every bit of funding from Saudi, Qatar and Iran coming into our nation. They are currently controlling mosques, madrasas, they're controlling the influence on our youth. Our universities are being funded by the same country, same as in the United States. They are radicalising a generation of our university students to hate Britain, to hate the West, to be sympathetic to terrorist organisations. So there's many things that I'd do, but that's the first list.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Tommy Robinson, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Tommy, for coming on the Freeman Report. Bye. Thank you. Right, that's it for me for this week. I'll be back next week to do it all again, but don't go anywhere. Stay with us right here on TNT.